Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's happening,
brother?
What's up?
This is a Cuban party, man.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we
and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on? Yeah, what's going on? Oh, what's going on?
Oh, right now. Right now.
Good evening, everyone, and I am so glad to be back live and in living color. Sorry we had to vacate last week, but that was under some unforeseen circumstances. But we are back with you this week, and this is our final pre-recorded broadcast that we are going to do. So next Sunday, which will be October the 9th, is going to be the first live show where we actually invite everyone in with their questions and their comments. And I am so looking forward to hearing from all of you who have listened to the broadcast. So we're looking forward to hearing your voices and certainly answering your questions and hearing your comments. Today, the topic of discussion would be the cost of poverty. And before I actually turn over to our co-host, Brother Gene Gordon, I want to share some information, but I also want to acknowledge that Brother Vernon from the Washington, D.C. area, from the great DMV is with us, as well as Brother Gene is on. And, of course, we're going to hear from Dr. Bob Brantley of Baltimore about this same topic of discussion. But before we hear from them, I wanted to share some information. And we know that when we get statistics that, you know, everything is not right on the money, it's not, you know, true and exact, but it certainly is near, especially when you have those organizations that really focus on statistics and gathering information. We could only hope that their guesstimate was accurate. But even if it's not exactly accurate, it's certainly leaning in that direction. I want to point out that in hunger alone in this country, that in the year of 2021, which we, of course, know was like the second wave of the COVID, you know, era, there was $160 billion spent in just providing meals, whether it was through the SNAP program, through Health and Human Services, whether it was through other government subsidies, whatever it was, it totaled up to be about $160 billion in the year of 2021, $18.8 billion in health care, $53 billion in other public assistance, whether it's rent, utilities, or whatever it was. But the sad thing about that, with all that money contributed to the cause of poverty, still 250,000 people die as a result of poverty in this country. Not necessarily, oh, they starve to death, but the results of poverty, whether it's crime, whether it's, you know, depression, whether it's circumstances that lead you to death because of poverty, but 250,000 living, breathing people took their last breath directly associated with the results of poverty and inequity, the loss of economic productivity, and the child poverty costs more than $1 trillion. And what does that mean? That $1 trillion went to organizations like CPS, health care, mental health care, counseling, housing, food, clothing for displaced children that are often abused and mistreated because of the stressors that poverty actually create. In healthcare alone, for children who have been misplaced, it has been $111 billion since the year of 2020. And this is all due to systemic racism, ecological devastation, and militarism. So a lot of times we don't think about that. But if our country is at war, whether it's helping an ally or whatever, because, you know, America's never going to declare war on anybody. But the fact that we are assisting with Al-Qaeda and all these other places, the loss of life and the cost of war contributed to that $111 billion that America spent. And it's all because of poverty. A lot of people go into the military because of poverty. Another thing I want to share before I turn it over, mass incarceration. In the year of 2021, the United States of America spent $179 billion in mass incarceration and $78 billion in private operations like the CIA, the DEA, all these other agencies that, are included in the methodology of getting people incarcerated. But another $123 billion in loss because of the lack of productivity in America due to mass incarceration, meaning that the people who are behind bars, if they were not behind bars, they would contribute at least $123 billion towards the economy of the United States. So we're taking a great loss due to poverty. And the one last thing I want to share is that the United States has spent $6.4 trillion since 2001 on war, and that between the years of 1990 and 2015, 7,000 people have died, committed suicide, have committed suicide directly affiliated with poverty. In a country that is supposed to be so great, in a country that is supposed to have so much wealth, so much power, but we have these atrocities in our community. So if you don't think that poverty costs, I beg to differ. And we're going to hear some information from our illustrious guests that are with us today. So I want to turn it over now to Brother Gene Gorton. Good evening, Brother Gene. How are you?
Good evening, Sister Queen. How are you?
I'm great. I don't know how great I am after getting those numbers, but I'm all right.
Yeah, those numbers are staggering. But first of all, I want to just say welcome everybody to the show. And secondly, what is poverty and what is the poverty threshold? I think it's important that we all know, because some of us are at the poverty level and don't even realize it. And the poverty threshold, let's say a family of three, if you're making $19,000 or less, you're in poverty. A family of four people, $25,700 or less, you're in poverty. Family of five, $30,000. Family of six, $34,000. Family of seven is $39,000. So if you have a family of, you, single mother, six to seven children, you're making $4,000 a month, you're in poverty. And most of Americans who are wage slave earners who go to work 9 to 5, 40 hours a week, are one paycheck away from abject poverty. You mentioned something in your opening. You talk about, hunger and the amount of people in America that goes to bed hungry every day, but yet we have people who literally throw food away every day. So we have to ask ourselves, what kind of society have we created where thousands and thousands of people go to bed hungry, but you got people with money and institutions and restaurants and things like that who literally just throw food away every day, every night after closing. And that doesn't make sense. But another thing you mentioned about the amount of money that America spends, let's talk about the amount of money that America spends in programs to try to reduce the poverty rate. Well, a lot of those programs have decreased by 9%, but besides poverty, we have to look at, you know, what is being poor, you know. Being broke and being poor, you know, is different, you know. Broke to me is a temporary circumstance. Poor is a state of mind. But if the people in America does not own a valuable capital, I'm going to say that again, a valuable capital estate, you're considered poor, and that makes up about 99% or 98% of the people in America. Yet America is considered to be the richest country in the world. Well, America has really lost its popularity and lost friends throughout the world because the biggest power that America has is its military. But let's just deal with the economic part of it all. You know, why does America continue to have the poverty rate? Like, for instance, in America, you have 37 million people who are in poverty, 37 million. We all know that the numbers are much, much larger than that. That's based on the U.S. Census Bureau. But how many people do not participate in the U.S. Census count? So those numbers are not accurate. And these are the numbers that the government actually allocate their dollars based on a false pretense of the numbers that they gather from the Census Bureau. Now, I don't know if those who are incarcerated, whether they are required to fill out the Census Bureau, but the mass incarceration rate, those who are mentally ill, the mentally ill out here that's walking the street, don't participate in the Census Bureau. But what got America into this, and why is it continuing? It's because after World War II, and American governments continuing to do this today, is they are addressing the effect of poverty and not going to the root cause of poverty. And when I say addressing the effects, you know, they give you food stamps, SNAP program, they give you affordable housing. You know, when you can't house yourself, they give you affordable housing. Well, all of that is addressing the effect of poverty. But you have to begin to address the root cause of poverty. And I believe the root cause of poverty has a lot to do with, as you mentioned, structural racism. And bottom line, it's structural racism and the lack of capital ownership among the people, because, you know, they looked at one input, you know, they came in 1946, you know, they with the New Deal, you know, the Unemployment Act, you know, you address the Unemployment Act, and they wanted everybody working and, you know, full employment is what I'm trying to say. But, you know, full employment, but that was just one input of production and not looking at the second input of production, which is capital. But, you know, we have to begin to open up discussions on the economic part of it. America spent a lot of money and investment in creating the middle-class white communities, redlining, the GI Bill. That costs a lot of money. So I believe poverty stems from structural racism. Here in St. Louis, just to give you some numbers in St. Louis, 34% of blacks in St. Louis residents live in poverty, 36%. But I gave you the threshold of poverty, but what we do and what puts us even further below the line of poverty is that those who are in the poverty, at the poverty level, don't even realize it. that they're in poverty. And then yet those, the most impoverished people want the most expensive material items. People live in poverty, they want $200, and they actually go buy $200 worth of $200 tennis shoes. So all of these are things that we have to look at, but yet we're the biggest and the number one. Get this, the number one, when you talk about ethnic background, the number one people who are in poverty in America is the Native Americans. The Native Americans, here, the land that was stolen from a people and an economic powerhouse built on their land, they're the most impoverished people in America today. And after that, of course, is blacks. That's alarming. That doesn't make any sense at all to me. I mean, a people who land was stolen and taken from them now is the most impoverished in America. But yet America is supposed to be the most powerful, richest country in the world. So, you know, she mentioned about how much America spends in its military. America, you know, has the will to send, you know, $40 billion over to Ukraine, and nothing against the Ukrainian people. How can you go and put money into another country, but yet right here at home, you've got people living on the street and 37 to 40 million people living in poverty? I believe charity begins at home and village spreads abroad, but America's taking the wrong approach. And the question is, do they really care? Is it by design that capitalism is a feeder of structural racism and wants to keep the masses in impoverished conditions? You know, what they're doing is that the top 1% is really gaining more and more riches and wealth at the expense of the many. Well, and that's something that we have to reverse and turn around.
Yes, sir. And I completely...
Sister Muhammad?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, this is Dr. Brantley. I'm here. Sorry I'm late.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Brantley. Okay, and Jean, I totally agree with you about, you know, America and how the, you know, racism actually plays a part. Definitely, definitely hold them accountable. But now, in this day, it's time for us to hold ourselves accountable as well. Not to say that America is not accountable for the racism and the disenfranchisement that's taking place, not only in America, but however, it is past time for us to start focusing on us and how are we going to survive for the next generation. We are losing our children. What does that mean? Not only minus the children that have never been born, but what does that mean for our future? Poverty impact us. The poverty rate that we're facing today, how will it impact the next 20 years if we don't get it together? And I want to hear from you, Jean. I want to hear from Bernie. I want to hear from Brother Kareem, who's on. I don't know. There's another person that's on, the last four numbers, 6900. I would love to acknowledge who that is. Your mic is live. Who is that?
Well, this is Norm Kurland. I'm calling from 999-3506.
Oh, okay. Well, it's showing up another number. But glad to have you, Dr. Kurland. I didn't know you were there. So I want to hear from everybody on this topic because it's very important. I want y'all to answer my question. How does poverty today impact us 20 years from now at the rate that we're going? I guess I'll start with you, Brother Gene, since you...
Sister Queen, this is Brother Vernon. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
All righty. Thank you for allowing me to join the conversation this week. I was anxiously anticipating it, and listening to you run down those numbers was very sobering. But the one that stood out to me, and couple of that with what Brother Gene was saying as he got to the root of poverty and what the real cost of it is. The one that stood out to me was the fact that you said 57,000 people committed suicide because of poverty and the effects of poverty. That if all the other points were lost and you just think of that, that just says to me that the most evil thing on the planet is what Brother Gene points to as the root, this systematic racism, the fact that there's a system. Somebody put this together to the tune that 57,000 people, and I can't remember the time frame, 57,000 people and how much
from
time.
From 1990 to 2015.
From 1990 to 2015, 57,000 people felt like they just couldn't do it anymore, like they just didn't have the will to fight back. I mean, it takes, I don't know, I've never been a bully, but I really hate bullies. But to beat somebody into submission to the point where they give up and don't even want to fight no more. To jump to your question with that in my mind, what does it look like 20 years from now? I realize that we are in a fight, and what it looks like is those of us who are feeling the effects of poverty, feeling the effects of this systemic racism, but who haven't lost that will to fight, who haven't given up yet. What it looks like is more of us coming together, arm in arm, and saying, no, that's not going to be our future. I think they came out with some, I don't remember who did the research and who put the statistic out there, but they said that, what is it, by 2030 or 2045, the net worth of Black Americans is going to be zero. There's going to be no Black wealth. Somebody actually projected that into the future. 20 years from now, I'm declaring, hell no, that's not going to be the future. Those of us have the will to fight, those of us who are coming together and forming networks and linking arm in arm, declare emphatically that that's not going to be the reality.
That's right. I agree with you wholeheartedly, Brother Vernon. It can't be, for everybody that's on this line and everybody that are listening. I just pray that everybody is taking these statistics seriously and knowing that those numbers that are already detrimental to us as a people are getting worse. They're getting worse. So thank you, Brother Vernon, for making that declaration and that commitment to empowering us and, pushing us to go forward. And like you say, to lock arms and come together and bring about a resolution. So who would like to be next to answer my question?
Yes,
at
ma'am.
This poverty rate, what does the future look like?
Yes, ma'am. Peace.
Assalamu alaikum. How are you, Brother Kareem?
Wa alaikum salam. I am fine, indeed. And I must thank Allah for that. And to lamb tail off of what Brother Vernon said, because I can't go with that other animal. The bottom line is that in 20 years, the conversation we have now won't even be a conversation. In 20 years, we will be 100% and completely on top, because what is in place is the winds that it talks about in Ezekiel, the dry bones. The circumstances are forcing us to move forward. Now, the thing is that it would be a great, great thing if everybody was going to make it. Unfortunately, we have to accept the fact that everybody isn't going to make it. Okay, I've heard the word poverty, you know what I'm saying, and I've heard the different definitions and things. And the bottom line is that poverty itself is a mindset. Nothing happens without your mind being focused one way or the other. So in order to get the people moving, we have to get them out of the poverty mindset. And when I say poverty mindset, for example, I'm going to give you this example. I may have used it before, but I'm going to use this is one. The difference between an individual with a poverty mindset and an individual with a wealth mindset is that the individual with a poverty mindset is okay with temporary sense gratification. As Brother Gene was talking about, an individual will go and they can't make their rent, but they're going to go spend $200 on the latest pair of Jordans or Nikes or whatever it is. Okay. They can barely feed the children, but they're going to make sure that they got their weed sack. Okay, that's a poverty mindset. This is an individual that, now don't get me wrong, everybody can't be the boss. Everybody can't start a business. Some individuals are going to have to work for others. We understand that. But the thing is you can't continue to work for those who have put in place this system of racism. Because when you continue to work for them, whether that's paying your current bills or not, you are helping to perpetuate your own enslavement.
Come on.
I heard people talking about the unemployment rate. And the people, if they need a job, they need a job. Come on. We had a job for 379 years and didn't get paid a dime. It ain't about just having a job. It's about understanding where our efforts need to be placed. We, as a matter of fact, me myself now, I mean, I study many different things. One of the books that I study is called Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice. In there, the brother speaks about the fact that we all have to daily express and work toward our major definite purpose. Me myself, I've set my major definite purpose as this: to attain and maintain complete physical, mental, spiritual, and economic health. Just that simple phrase, and I repeat it constantly throughout the day to remind me this is what I got to be working on. And I'm going to say, because I don't want to take up a whole bunch of time, but the thing is, again, back to that poverty mindset and the wealth mindset, give you an example, another example. The individual with a poverty mindset will go to the bank to get a loan, and they're going to ask them, what do you have as collateral? And whatever you put up as collateral, basically you're saying, I'm going to put this up, and this particular thing, whatever property or whatever it may be, if I default on this loan, then you can take this property. Most people go and they'll put up their home. Okay. An individual with a wealth mindset, now it's the same building with the same people in it, but an individual with a wealth mindset goes to not the bank but to the financial institution. and goes in and says, I have these assets, and I would like some financing. I want to produce some financing from you, understanding that whatever they produce, they're producing it based on you, yourself, because actually you are the real asset. But whatever asset it may be, the house or whatever, you go and you get that financing, which usually turns out to be a line of credit of some type, and you use that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No, understanding that even if it was your house that you used as an asset, it's not collateral. So that means that even if you were to default on the line of credit, they can't take your property because it's an asset, not collateral. We have to understand the language. We were taught that in order to be successful in this society was three things we must have. We must master mathematics. We must have a comprehensive understanding of history, not just be able to quote it. It's like you're giving the statistics, that's history. But we have to understand what that means for us. 57,000 people committed suicide as a result of poverty? Was it just the conditions? Or what was it that was in their minds and their hearts that made them, as Brother Vernon say, you know what, I just can't do this no more. I'm finna go on out. Man, I don't care. Of course, I thank God I will never be poor or broke, ever. But I wouldn't care how broke I got temporarily. There's no way I would give up. But so like I say, again, we have to look at what would make a person just give up. What is going on? What are they feeding themselves, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally? And the best thing that we can do, I think, this is my opinion now. Now I'm giving my opinion. The best thing we can do is to link arms, come together, and continue to build our wealth on all the levels, but we also have to produce some institutions.
Yes.
Okay. If you talk about schools in the quote-unquote the impoverished areas, there are no schools. They just shut them all down, and they turn them into condos here. So we need to produce some institutions. We need some schools that are actually going to teach children what economics is. You know, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to be quiet. See, a lot of people think economics is just money. No, economics simply means the correct and proper administration of limited resources. That's economics. So whatever the resource is, we have to be able to administer it correctly. We need some hospitals.
Yes.
These youngsters out here, they need to get their minds out of they want to be a gamer or they don't necessarily be a computer programmer. I'm not saying don't do that, but learn some skills, something that you can have that they can't take away from you, can always produce with it. So, like I said, in conclusion, yeah, in 20 years, I don't see us in this position because circumstances are forcing us to come together and not just survive, but to thrive.
Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum salam. Thank you, Brother Kareem. Okay,
yes,
so who's next?
This is Brother Brantley.
Yes, sir, Brother Brantley.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you for this program and for the opportunity to participate. I've heard so much, and I appreciate all the opinions that I've heard. I may not agree with all of them, but I do appreciate them because all of us have something to say and something to contribute. But let me just pick a recent statement that was made. Brother made reference to limited resources. I don't think there's such a thing as limited resources. There are enough resources on this planet to provide for more than the people that are on the planet. There's 7 or 8 billion of us. The world can take care of us. However, and this is the root of poverty, Poverty is a moral issue more than anything else. It's a moral issue. It is a question of whether and how the resources that are plentiful on this planet are going to be used in such a way as to serve all the people on the planet. So what has happened and is still happening is that there is a war against children. Somebody said that all wars are against children. In addition to that, you could say that all poverty is against children. And so what, you know, the topic that you have for today, the cost of poverty, the cost is the children, the lives of the children, the futures of the children, and therefore the future of this planet. And I want us to remember what one revolutionary said. He said, think globally, but act locally. Think globally, but act locally. And I want to tell you that all the numbers, the terrible numbers that have been quoted today, the numbers are much worse than that, much worse. Even in America, but especially around the world. You think 57,000 suicides is terrible? I would say more like there are 57 million suicides around the globe. And all those people were our brothers and sisters. All those families were our brothers and sisters. All those children who died or our brothers and sisters. And so, while we want to get to, you know, what can we do? I believe in that. And how can we fight against the institutions that have strangled and continue to strangle us? I think we need to take a moment and really understand the depth, the width, and the severity of the problem. Because I'm not so sure that America as we know it can survive 20 years. I'm not so sure that the America that we know can survive 5 years. And if America does not survive, then the poorest people in America will not survive. So it's really a struggle for the morality, the hearts and minds of all Americans, if we just want to stay with America, the hearts and minds of Americans, because either we will continue to have slavery, it's called America's original sin, I'm not sure it was, but it's one of the early ones. What America did to the Indians might have been the original sin.
Amen.
If we're going to not have slavery in this country, do we need to think about all forms of slavery that we have in this country? Not just the ball and chain, but now the 9-to-5. You know, we're all wage slaves, in fact, and we're wage slaves in our minds. We're wage slaves in our hearts. Our morality is a wage slave morality, it appears to me, because we worship this whole thing about full employment. And I do think the brother said earlier, as black people, we've had full employment in this country. I don't want to go to full employment. Because that could take us right back to slavery in balls and chains. What we need is a full recognition of the fact that there's plenty on earth for all of us, and we have to demand that the powers that be share the wealth with all people. And we have to make sure that we're fighting on the right mountain. One of those mountains is the mountain of expanded capital ownership. If you're going to talk about America, an out-of-control capitalist system that at the same time is an out-of-control socialist system, because when certain people get in trouble, they're called billionaires, we bail them out with social programs worth billions of dollars. I think the last tax break was $1.5 trillion. So we're as much a socialist society as we are a capitalist society. But there needs to be another way. And there is a just third way. And it's a more moral way. So I just want to encourage our speakers and our listeners and all of us to really think about how much trouble we're in. And don't think that you gathering a few dollars and stuff in your pocket is going to solve anything. We need a few dollars gathered, and we need to use those few dollars in certain ways. But it has to be strategic, and it has to be part of a bigger plan. The bigger plan is to change these man-made, these phony man-made systems that are choking all of us in America, not just poor people. It's choking all of us. Only the super rich are not choked financially, but even they are starving morally. And some of their lives are lives of misery because there's so much misery in America. There's so much misery in the world. And no amount of money can buy you freedom from that. Not really. I'm done for the moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Brantley, for contributing to the answer to my questions. Okay, so Dr. Curlin?
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, because we've heard many heartfelt poverty, racism, and war, and I was happy to hear Dr. Brantley mention the just third way. And I believe we need something other than on the left, socialism and communism, or on the right, capitalism. We need a just third way, and there is one. Martin Luther King, in 1967 said, "What I'm saying to you this morning is communism forgets that life is individual. Capitalism forgets that life is social. And the kingdom of brotherhood is found neither in the thesis of communism nor the antithesis of capitalism, but in a higher synthesis. It is found in a higher synthesis that combines the truths of both of these. Now, when I say questioning the whole society, it means ultimately coming to see that the problem of racism, the problem of economic exploitation, and the problem of war are all tied together. These are triple evils that are interrelated." He said that to the Southern Christian Leadership Conference in August of 1967. There is a third way, and I cannot say that it's something that I bring to the world. It comes from a man named Louis Kelso, and we organized. I worked with him. And really was on the wrong path. I thought a welfare system was important. And when I finished law school in economics at the University of Chicago, I came to Washington and went to work with the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. And I saw the racism in the decisions that were being made, even within the Kennedy administration, and so I
I left that to go into civil rights work with the Commission on Civil Rights and work with Medgar Evers and Aaron Henry of NAACP and Bob Moses of the SCLC. These were people who had the guts to take on killers throughout society. But what I realized when I went back when they had a war on poverty and I went into that and saw that they never did anything in the war on poverty for enabling the poor to be participating in the changes that were happening. And I was providing money to grassroots organizations, and those above me didn't like the idea, so I was going to quit. And somebody walked into my office and spent 15 minutes describing the ideas of Kelso. And I said, and I know Bob Brantley does know this, that he said, he taught me Kelso's ideas, and I said, why didn't I think of that? And that's what I would encourage people to go to the website of Gene Gordon, and you will see many books and references to our Center for Economic and Social Justice. Of course, Gene is a member of our board, and he formed the Descendants of Slaves for economic justice. Now, on both of these websites, you're going to find books. One, for example, Curing World Poverty, The New Role of Property. Now, most people don't know what property is. They think, as I did before I attended the law school, I always thought property are things. No. No, property is the power that you have over things. And it's also the right to the fruits of things. And, of course, slavery denied those rights because the slave was treated as a thing, as property. And that just didn't make any sense from anyone who believes in justice. And so I want to mention something about that. In Article 17 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, when the UN was formed on December 10, 1948, they said on Article 17, everyone has the right to own property individually and in association with others. And then the second point, no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his property. And, of course, the poor don't have property. But the point of Kelso was that everyone should have property. And then he turned to something that most people, again, don't understand, is what is money? What is the money system? Because it's in the money system that it's dependent on the few and not the many, whether they're political in control of the money system or a few capitalists in control of that. And therefore, you must know what is property. And I want to just take a minute to just define in a few sentences what Kelso said about property. He said, money is not a part of the visible sector of the economy. People do not consume money. Money provides a means, it's a yardstick of value. It provides a means for determining, measuring obligations, rights, powers, and privileges so that and some people can accumulate these claims against others, but that's in the system. It's in the design of the money system, and the solution is the Economic Justice Act, which you can find on Gene's website, also on the website of the Center for Economic and social justice. I don't want to spend much more time on this, but I encourage the listener to look at the description of the Economic Democracy Act. And what it would do is enable every child from the time of birth, every woman, every man of all races, equal access to money to become an owner. Now, you're told, no, you must have money to get money. No, it's not true. In other words, they always said it was in the past accumulation. But you can, the central banks of the world can create money in such a way that every citizen would get an equal slot, equal amount of the growth capital that takes place, which is about $4 trillion a year. And what that would mean if you divided the population of the United States into that, it would be about $12,000 a year. And this is a new capital formation, new shares are being sold, and it would enable people to buy those shares. They'd be full dividend, they'd be full voting, full dividend payout shares. And you have a tax system that will encourage that, because corporations would be able to escape from having to pay corporate taxes if they paid out all their dividends. And now, so a citizen could go to their local bank, let's say a family of four, and each of them would be able to get the same amount, say $10,000, even though we figured it was about $12,000. If you have the right, if you have an Economic Democracy Act, each one would be able to get $10,000. And it would not be paid out of past savings, but out of the dividends in the future. Now, that doesn't stop the need for poverty programs in the beginning. You're still going to need that. But on the other hand, what you want to do is begin to build power into people, the power of ownership into people, and this can be done. We did it. Kelso and I were able to get the laws so that employee stock ownership plans, which Kelso invented, were passed by the Congress. And now you had, and this is important, and I testified before the Joint Economic Committee of Congress in 1976, and they said broadened ownership of new capital. It was going to be a new goal, equal to full employment. And Hubert Humphrey, who ran for president, called for broadened capital ownership as a new program. And yet, today, there isn't a single person, even Republicans. President Ronald Reagan became a supporter of, we developed a law for a president task force for him, and I was appointed as the deputy chairman, but you had the left, you had the right, you had unions, you had all kinds of people in it. And we came out with a universal plan for expanded ownership. And President Reagan, if you go to the website, you can hear him how happy he was with our plan. He was a supporter of these ideas. McGovern, I met with him, a former presidential candidate, and he
Dr. Curlin, we don't want you to monopolize the time. We understand. We know.
That's all I have to say. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Brother Gene?
Yeah. What Norm is just describing is a way that we can begin to cure world poverty, and we have a plan to do so. But he mentioned a very important book, and it's called Curing World Poverty. And I encourage everybody to go on the website and take a look at the book. But also I want to pity back to what the cost of poverty, you know, when you mentioned the suicide rate, if you all can recall the guy that went into the school and killed all those children down in Texas, and he said that the reason he did that because he was tired of seeing his parents, you know, struggle. The incident you just had outside of Chicago where the guy shot up, I think it was a 4th of July celebration. He said the same thing. But my point being, the cost of poverty is the subject matter today. And the cost of poverty is just not from a financial standpoint, but the cost of poverty, the biggest cost of poverty is human life. And taking away the opportunity for individuals to live at their fullest potential and human dignity, that's the biggest cost of poverty. And you talk about the mortality rate and where this would take us in the next, as Dr. Brantley said, he don't see America surviving for the next 20 years. And I agree with him 1,000% because, you know, as we did one segment about understanding the fall of empires, you know, they normally fall 250 years after their establishments. But dealing with the mortality rate, if you look at the immortality rate amongst blacks, it's gone through the ceiling. And the cost of poverty, and if you look within the black community, more black people die from AIDS, more black women are affected by AIDS, more blacks die from cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, heart failure. So you have to look at, those are some of the costs of poverty. And these things were actually created, you know, to with the Jim Crow laws. I mean, that was the whole object of creating the Jim Crow laws, to keep people at the bottom. So, but we're introducing a plan on how we can begin to cure, you know, poverty, not just in America, but in the world. Dr. Brent also mentioned something. We have to start thinking globally, but act locally. So what I'm saying, and another thing is that poverty has also cost people like you and I and people of the world to really lose their moral fabric of being a human being.
Come on.
Those are the biggest costs above money. We have lost our moral values and fabric of being human. I mean, poverty can put people in a state of mind where they do things that animals don't do. They go below the animalistic stage. Those are some of the big costs on poverty. So we have got to, you know, the question is, what can we do? Do we have a solution to the problem? Yes, we do. We have to educate community,
come on,
citizens, leaders, politicians, you name it. Even the man that holds the biggest office in America, the President of the United States, needs to be brought in to a little guy like me with no education and be taught on the system that he's not aware of. He's in trouble. America's in trouble. And the people that will suffer the most is those who are at the bottom of the social rent. So we when we talk about, you know, all the problems that we're facing, what are we going to do about it? I believe with everything that's in me, the DASPE ESJ is the only organization that's bringing a sound solution. Norman was talking about how what he was explaining was capital formation. And capital formation is just the amount of money that will be spent to for the growth of the economy. You know, he said $2 trillion. That means, and he divided it by the population, that means that the poorest of the poorest would get $11,000 a year, a lot. The poorest of the poorest would get $11,000. That's a way to begin to close the wealth gap. That's a way to begin to lift people out of poverty. We cannot continue on looking to social programs to solve the poverty issue. Social programs, poverty program, it's not working. They've been doing it for the last 90-plus years. It has not worked. We have got to come up with more innovative ways and come up with systemic solutions to solve systemic problems. We have to stop looking at programs. We have to stop looking at government to solve our problems. Government, that's the reason that they hold a job in government. Because 65% of the taxation power that goes to American government is welfare. So if they had less welfare to govern, then we need less government. So we just have to look at every aspect of this poverty issue. There's a lot more than just being, you know, not having, you know, enough to survive and not having enough to. The homelessness, I mean, it's going through the shift. And I'm seeing more young people who are homeless than ever before. You know, we need broad-based ownership, capital ownership. What Kareem was talking about, collateral, that's capital. We need more broad-based capital ownership. And Dr. Brantley was saying that there's enough resources in the world to do it. Yes, there's enough resources to do it. It's just that the resources are not being distributed fairly enough to all people and giving all people the equal access to own capital. In order to solve the poverty problem, we have to begin to look at capital. If you're not looking at capital, you're not addressing the problem.
Yeah. And let me address this, Gene. Let me address this. Not only does the Just Third Way provide a mechanism, a legal, social mechanism, but it provides a commitment, a moral commitment to every human being that's born in America. It starts at birth. It's a commitment that takes to every baby that is born. You will not be born into poverty. You will be born into a system of ownership. You, your siblings, your parents, your whole family. One of the things that that moral commitment does is it provides a certain level of hope, a certain level of, well, I think we can do it if we hang together because we have something to work with. There are four in the family. We can all go to the bank and demand our $10,000, $11,000, $12,000 because we have a plan. You know, we're going to start a business. We're not just begging for money. We're demanding our right to the opportunity to access the capital that will help us produce income in the future that will not only repay this money, but will benefit society as a whole. That's a moral decision. And if we're not able to convince people in that there's a moral issue here that needs to be addressed, then some of us are just going to have to assume positions of power. We're going to have to elect Dean to something, elect Queen to something. Other of us are going to have to assume positions of power to get this thing turned around.
Yeah, I agree. And we talk about in St. Louis alone, we have concentrated poverty here in the city of St. Louis, concentrated poverty, you know. And like you were saying, Dr. Brantley, it's a moral responsibility and what the Economic Democracy Act, what it will add to the American economy, it will. That's the way to grow the economy. You don't grow the economy by inflationary growth. That's what's happening. They're trying to grow this economy. We're pumping money out here, and it's causing inflation. We've got a non-inflationary idea on how to grow the economy, which, I mean, it's just common sense. If more people have money, if more people have a second income plan, you know, second income, you know, that they can spend extra, put extra money into the economy by consuming goods that they need or want and not, you know, that's just a moral, it makes sense. You know, the best sense is common sense, and it's just common sense. It will get the economy going, you know, without causing inflation. You cannot continue to pump money into a system, print it out of thin air, and they're trying to balance this thing out, you know. The Rockefellers had a, you know, and the Rothschilds had a meeting back in late 80s up on their estate, you know, and they're asking, hey, man, this thing, they're saying, this thing ain't working. You know, what can we do? You know, and I bet they had these meetings many times after that. You know, the system ain't working. Well, what can we do to fix it? You know, but we all got a job to do. We all got a responsibility to, if we really care about, you know, the landscape of our communities and seeing people, you know, go to bed hungry, you know, yet we throw food away. You know, we all got a responsibility. I mean, we all love our grandchildren. I mean, but if you really, really love your grandchildren, then you go to work. We haven't had a law or an act enacted that will benefit us since the Civil Rights Movement. What sense did that make? That says that we don't have any revolutionary leaders anymore. What happened to the revolutionaries? What happened?
No, they killed them all.
Not only that they killed them all, when they killed them all,
they
we
killed
did not,
the spirit.
They killed the spirit. And and it goes back to continuity, you know. There's no continuity within the community anymore. Every generation has to start from scratch. Well, the next generation after this one, they're going to have to do more than start from scratch. I mean, they're going to have to lift themselves up out of the grave because this thing is getting ugly. And those of you who go day by day thinking you're okay because you live in a nice home, you got manicure lawns, 2 and 3 car garages, you know, you doctors. I mean, it's going to affect everybody when this bubble bursts. I mean, but who else than the descendants of American slaves got an idea, got a concept, a sound program, a sound, nobody can tell me what's wrong with this an idea. You know, if I tell people, you show me something better, I'll quit this thing in a minute. You know, so we have to, we just, as a people, we have to get out of the distractions and start looking at some serious issues. We got to open up discussion about, and stop trying to find the easy damn way out. You know, everybody jumping on criminal justice reform, that's the easy way out. We have to step outside the box and boots on the ground and get our hands dirty. Now, is it going to be easy? No. Nobody, nothing good comes easy. But we're at war. And the enemy is poverty, racism, and fratricidal conflict. That's what we're dealing with today. And I just say, those of you, you have to stop talking and start going out there and making things happen and being effective in the communities. And we got to demand for system change, and particularly the monetary system has to be changed. That's the number one. If no organization, no leaders is talking about the monetary policies. It was the Feds that created all this. It's going to take the Feds to correct it. Now, when I say the Feds, I'm not talking about federal government. I'm talking about the Federal Reserve. They had a big part in creating this. They've got a big part in correcting it. Thank you.
Brother Gene, I just wanted to agree with Brother Gene real quick. I definitely think that we need to develop our focus and get rid of the distractions. But I also wanted to say, Brother Gene, that we say that there are no more revolutionaries out here, or we're asking where they are. There are people who are on different fronts than we are on. It's time to connect those dots, but they are out here.
Exactly.
And they may not be moving the way that we move, but their front and the front that they're on is just as valid and needed as the front that we're on. And at the right time, we will all come together.
Yeah, and that's a matter of pulling our resources together, coming together, you know. And that's what we also want to do. We want to build coalitions and build partnerships with organizations. And, you know, as Elijah Muhammad once says, our unity is more powerful than an atomic bomb. I mean, we can make this happen. We can change the lives of individuals. I mean, just there's 50 million of us here in America. I mean, 50 million of us, probably only out of 50 million, probably 12 million, 13 million actually show up to vote, you know. But if we gave them something worth fighting for, you know, and we have to restore the hope. People have lost hope within the system, the leaders, you know, they lost hope. So we have to restore hope. And there's a strong possibility that it can be done.
Gene,
I just want to say this for a moment. Just give me a moment. In all that we're saying here, it just drives my spirit to the point when I mentioned that they killed all of the revolutionaries and all the people who had the fortitude to go and hold politicians and government and systems accountable. It did to us a breaking of the spirit to see Malcolm, Martin, and Mega, you know, some of the big ones, and then some of the ones that were local in Mississippi and Alabama and Tennessee and Florida and even here in Texas, to actually see them slaughtered and murdered. And, you know, we love this thing called life. You know, we in love with sucking breath every day. But if you have nothing that you'll die for, you absolutely have nothing to live for. And you have to be willing to hold people accountable. Because, see, everybody has a complaint about this system, about this government, about this race system. Everybody has a complaint. We as a people have never been able to come together on a humane agenda. Never have we ever taken an agenda to Congress and said that your system that you create has created an inhumane life for the darker people of the world, the darker people in this country. And then we re-elect people who look like us with the expectation that they're going to change something in our communities, and we sit back and we wait, and then when they fail us, we complain, but we don't hold anybody accountable for what they said they would produce. So when you talk about power, when you talk about political change, when you talk about system changes, you have to realize there are people at the head of those systems, people that we have never called out, whether it's our local politicians or whether it's our federal politicians. It don't matter. We have never called them out. And I think that in Dots for ESJ, along with galvanizing, along with building coalitions and other relationships and coming together, we have to come together on a humane agenda to say the truth, the ugly truth, the truth that we are dying out here, the truth that our children are dying out here, the truth that we don't have anything that we can produce and call it our own and benefit from it and allow our generations that go forth from us to benefit from it. And if you say you're tired and you're sick and tired of being tired, then be just tired enough to get up and do something about it. Because we have all sat back and watched our political counterparts do their thing, lie to us, come back 2 years later, come back 4 years later in our communities, kissing our babies, shaking our hands, making false promises. If we could conduct a million-man march for atonement and reconciliation, we can damn sure do a million-man march for freedom, justice, and equality. And not only just march, but hold those people accountable and demand a place where we can voice our concerns and introduce to them a new economic paradigm that will work for everybody. You have the God-given right to do it because our blood, our sweat, our tears, our suffering, our bodies have gone into this soil. And we are the owners of this country. But we don't act like it. We're scared of the white man. We're scared of a bullet. We're scared to die.
Sister Queen, can you imagine what this country would look like if we could get all the various groups out there? And they are out there, and Gene knows this. We have heroes across this country from corner to corner, black, white, red, and otherwise, heroic people that are trying to not only hang on themselves, but who in some cases are willing to die for things to be better in this country. What if every group would agree on one thing alone, that we will have no more children born into poverty in this country. As of January 1, 2023, that every child born in this country will be born an owner and not a slave. Do it any way you want to do it. Approach it your way, but commit to that. What would America look like?
Yeah, that's a good question. But the first thing that has to be addressed is the economic system. That's one thing that hasn't been addressed. Dr. Martin Luther King was headed back to Washington to demand and ask for an economic agenda, and he was assassinated 3 weeks prior to going back to Washington.
That's why Negroes are scared.
And that's the baton that DOS for ESJ is picked up. We want to go to Washington, but this time we don't go to Washington government. We go to the monetary system, the Federal Reserve, and ask and demand, and children, women, men, and children telling them to stop financing my future. But here's the problem that has to be addressed with other organizations coming together. We have to be on this accord, if not nothing else. We have to come to realize that why is American economic system is falling? It is because you got money chasing, if they're printing out this money, you got more money chasing fewer goods and services. That's the problem. And these idiots in Washington, they can't even figure it out. Even if, or they know it and they're scared to bring it forth.
You know, but we figured it out. Lewis Kelso figured it out. Norm Curlin figured it out. Gene Gordon figured it out. There is a solution. But how can we figure this out? I'm not Islamic. Can we get every Islamic group that's struggling to improve the condition of black folk in America to commit to no child being born into poverty? Just make a commitment to that and work toward that. Guess what? The best way to get that done is the Just Third Way. But if you got another way to contribute to that, that's okay. But can you make the commitment?
Yeah.
And every Muslim that I know will commit to that. That's a great goal.
Yeah. Exactly. And the second problem, I'm just laying down a foundation for the fight, you know. And the second problem is what's happening is while we have inflation is that because government is spending without producing any taxation, they're spending money, having money printed up, but there's no tax behind it, so it's not bringing any tax revenue. You know, $37-40 billion to Ukraine, that don't produce taxes. Military spending, that don't produce taxes. Stimulus checks going up $6 trillion, $20 trillion was printed over the last 3 years. The question that all of us must ask ourselves, with over the $20 trillion that was printed and spent, and with your children's children's children are going to be accountable for that $20 trillion because they're basing it off of future taxpayers, what did it produce? That's the question. What did it produce? Did it produce anything? I've seen more 65-inch color TV boxes in my dumpsters than any time before. It didn't produce anything. Go ahead, Norm.
Yeah, I think there are just two points I want to make. One, I want to repeat that the Article 17 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights saying that everyone has the right to own property, etc., and no country, this is incredible. It was signed in, it was brought in by Eleanor Roosevelt. She brought that in, but this was in 1948, everyone has the right to own property. Well, okay, it's time now, and the DAS is the ideal group to bring this forward. Now, Bucky Fuller, who worked with me to bring this to Harlem right after Dr. King was assassinated, I brought him and Kelso in. Kelso to give a talk because the Central Harlem Council and Neighborhood Boards had Ennis Francis as the leader for economics. She's known throughout Africa. When she heard of this idea, that became her approach, and she had been funded by the Ford Foundation. But when we started putting together a new Harlem that in which every citizen, every child, and every person in Harlem would have been an owner, they stopped funding the group, the Central Harlem Council and Neighborhood Board. And the same thing happened in East St. Louis. Ennis, Wyvetter Young was a leader there, and she was following Bucky Fuller's design for a new East St. Louis, and we had people there, experts from all over the country coming in to build a new city, a dome city for East St. Louis, and we it was passed the bill for enabling citizens to own all the land rather than government was passed by 114-0 by the Illinois House, and then she died. You see, and this is the past. Now you got DAS and the people that you have, you brought together today, are exactly what's needed. And I think the idea of getting a million people into Washington, not only at the Lincoln Memorial, but also across the street is the Federal Reserve to surround the Fed. And I had people surrounding the Fed, the first demonstration at the Federal Reserve. But if the DAS gets behind it and together Native Americans, it brings together even the racists in society to want, because they too are having a problem. But you're doing it not only for every person from the time they're born in America, when the first country that adopts the Economic Democracy Act will be copied all over the world.
Yeah, and Norm mentioned the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that was written in 1947, I think. When it's Article 17, when it says that everyone has the right to own property and in association with others. See, what we have to realize and understand, it is not talking about owning a car, owning a home
you live in.
It's not talking about that. They, Eleanor Roosevelt, they understood the power of property. Power follows property. And Norm was describing when it says everyone has the right to own property, what Norm was describing earlier, what is property? Get this, if you don't understand nothing else, property is not the thing that you own. Property is what the thing produces and the powers and the rights of the fruit that it produces. That's
Amen.
What property is. So the Declaration
Amen.
Of Human Rights, so everyone has that right. That's a fundamental human right, but nobody, no nation on earth has not exercised it and put it forth.
And we have now the responsibility to do that, Gene. We know it's a right. Now we have a responsibility to put that forth through every arena that we have access to, whether it's the black church, whether it's the mosque, whatever it is,
right?
Whether it's the soul club, HBCU, got to put forth, we have a responsibility, all of us, to make sure that that particular law, declaration, whatever, that declaration is fulfilled and that no child will be born outside of that. If we can make that commitment.
It's gonna take all of us. I mean, you know, this conversation that we're having today, you know, we have to just start reaching out, you know, each one, teach one, you know, we have to start reaching out and you know, sharing these ideas, you know, and I don't like to call it an idea, it's sharing these truths with others.
Right.
You know, and there's a big field awaiting the wide awake man. I mean, there's a lot that has to be done.
And remember that we're coming up with a new presidential election in 2024, But there's one that's there's going to be an election for Congress people next year. So why are we not focusing in to make sure that there's a presidential candidate who won't get your support, won't get the support of DAS, won't get the support of poor people generally, but all people, at least, look, the top 1% own more than the bottom 90%. So when the bottom 90% hear that they can have something, but you'll also let the 1% to get what the poorest child born today will get. So we're being equal in terms of opportunity, and we don't have to take their existing property because we can change the inheritance laws so that when they die, they spread it out.
That's the symbol. You know, if you look at Dashi's logo, that's our symbol in the logo, you know. We start from the bottom up where everybody, you have a broad-based ownership at the top, everybody wins. But what we have to do, which causes a big crisis, we have to create and become servant leaders. You know, we have to become selfless. You know, we have to start thinking about the conditions of others, you know, because it affects all of us, you know.
Another one to target on are the intellectuals, those who teach throughout the country at the highest level, but also in high schools, and also those who are going to be teaching young people. This is something that can be taught at every level. A child understands ownership. Just try taking a toy away from them. What do they say?
Mine.
That's the same thing Kareem was saying, is that we need institutions. We need new universities. We need new schools of learning because it is academia that is one of the root causes of this totally misunderstanding, because they're teaching the whole system. You know, what they teach at the university, colleges, and high school has no relevance to the survival of today out in society. Have no relevance.
Right.
What it's teaching is socialist and how to be a wage slave. You know, we got to change the system. You know, all institutions must become institutions of change, because they need a new paradigm, because it's quite evident that what they're teaching, the old paradigm, is not working. God said he comes to make all things new. So we have to become renewed in the mind, in the way that we think, you know. We just can't be thinking on this book.
You have a website with information. You know, it's all there, and it's so clear.
Yeah.
Your website is eloquent, and the things that they can get from it, the books that they can get, that's the way we'll get new intellectuals to be guiding the future of the world.
But the key thing is, in the book, in the Bible says, blessed is he who reads. But it don't stop there. It says, and who understands. So we have to get into reading. And the Islamic, you know, religion, God told Prophet Muhammad, Iqra, read. We have to read. We have to cut out the distractions that have been put for us to keep us blinded to what's really, really, really going on, you know. There's some things going down in America that we have to become more cognizant of and pay more attention to, because it's going to affect all of us. It's going to affect our grandchildren. if something doesn't change, you know, man, can you imagine what those type of robotics, artificial intelligence replacing human labor, can you imagine what those jobs that's going to be left? You know, I remember my grandmother used to have to catch the bus out to the rich neighborhood to clean houses. That's what we're going back to, because artificial intelligence and robotics is replacing human labor. Human labor will not be needed in the next 10, 15, 20 years. It will not be needed. So we have to make a change. You know, hey, I used to drive trucks. You know, they're coming out with trucks that drive by themselves. They're using them down over on the West Coast now. You know, as a truck driver, I would love to be at home, you know, snuggled up with my significant other rather than be out driving the truck. As long as I'm part ownership of the robotics and artificial intelligence that's driving their trucks, I have no problems with it, you know.
Right.
Now, the last company that I worked for, we transported automobile parts for General Motors, Ford, and Chevrolet. We transported automobile parts. Well, the plants are shut down, been shut down for the last 3 weeks because they're switching over the lines for electrical vehicles. Now, government made it mandatory, a mandate, that they wanted more electrical vehicles on the road. So the automobile industry is now switching over their lines to manufacture the electric vehicles, you know. See, I say that to mean that things are changing. And I live in downtown entertainment district of St. Louis, the business entertainment district, Washington Avenue. And, man, if you saw the things that I saw on the weekend, you know, we are too busy spending more time in sport and play than really sitting back, putting a game plan together and how to go out. Yeah, that will come later, but we have a more important job to do today so we can enjoy, you know, tomorrow. And our children can enjoy their next generation because, as I said, things are going down, and we're not paying attention to what's going down. But we have to become more conscious and put a game plan. We've got a game plan. We've got a blueprint. All we need is to build people power. When Dr. Martin Luther King went to Lyndon Johnson and said, "I want a voter rights bill," Lyndon Johnson said, "Make me do it." You know, Martin Luther King understood that he has, what he was saying is, you go get the people behind me, and that's the only way I'm forced to do it. You know,
right.
I mean, 50 million of us in America, and those who are poor white people, Native Americans, immigrants, you know, coming together, you know, one accord and demanding that the monetary policy and the monetary system be changed. That's the number one system that has to be changed first. It's the monetary system. It has to be changed. You know,
right.
Inflation, you know, when what's happened, what caused, and you got to educate people and Negroes on what really causes inflation. And what causes inflation is that when the quantity of money exceeds the growth of things to buy. That's what causes inflation. They got the quantity of money, they're printing money, putting it in the system, and it exceeds the growth to buy. That's what causes
it. That's called counterfeiting.
Yes, called
that's what's happening.
That's what's happening. But they can, governments can get away with it. You know why? Because the people are voiceless. Nobody is addressing this issue. You know, I sent the packet to a congresswoman here in St. Louis 3 weeks ago. I sent her a packet. I sent it to a Washington office and a St. Louis office. These are the type of people that we're dealing with. I sent it to her 3 weeks ago. I hadn't got a call from her yet. But I see her on social media entertaining things that have no substance at all. And that goes back to what I'm saying. We are quick to jump on the bandwagon to find the easy way out. But when it comes to serious issues and things that laws and legislation that really will change the direction of where the people is going and something new, see, their egos get in the way. But I haven't heard anything yet from her yet because we go at DOS, ESJ, and CSJ, we went outside the norm. See, people jump on the bandwagon when there's an easy way out, it's an easy fight. But this is something that's monumental. This is something that's big that would affect lives, not just of descendants of American slaves, but all people across the board. See, the mediocrity folks, they don't want to deal with something this big. So what we're going to have to do is force them to deal with it. 6 to 9% showed out at the polls last month. During the primary election, 23% showed it at the polls. So we've got a competitive edge. If we go out and educate the people on the new paradigm, then they begin to contact their local legislators, their congresspeople, their senators, say, hey, this is what we want. We want citizen land development co-op on local level. We want the Economic Democracy Act enacted on a national level. If you're not behind these programs, then we have come together where you won't get our votes. And the young people are most important. They're not participating in the political process. So if we can educate young people on the time and what must be done, if we can educate them and birth from that new leaders, new people, new politicians, that comes with a whole new paradigm. Time out for the status quo. You know, the mayor of St. Louis, when she ran her campaign, she's talking about, they always talk about how they're going to go against the status quo. The hell you would. You coming in leading. No, you're not. You coming in learning a new job is what you're doing. And you're going to get your agenda. When you get in office first, you get your agenda and what the agenda is. But the people have the power to really, really trump all of that. But they know how divided we are. They know if I was a politician, I'm going to stop here. If I was one of the politicians here in St. Louis, I'd be scared to death because the numbers show that there's work to be done. 12,000 people show up at a special election. You got a population of 300,000 and only 12,000 show up. I'll be scared to death. That'll tell me as a leader, as a politician, I got a lot of work to do. I've got to go against the grain because I'm one vote short of losing this race. 12,000 people out of 300,000 show up at the polls? Man.
You know, I mentioned Bucky. There's a statement he made that I think everybody can appreciate. He says, we are called to be architects of the future, not its victims. The challenge is to make the world work for 100% of humanity in the shortest possible time with spontaneous cooperation and without ecological damage, disadvantage of anyone. I think that's a pretty good statement for the new
movement. Yeah, and those of you who are not familiar, Buckminster Fuller was a scientist, brilliant. When I first heard him, when I first started listening to this man, I thought of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I mean, Buckminster Fuller is worth listening to. His scientific ideas and things he came up with are taught in many of the universities today. Buckminster Fuller is the designer of the geodesic domes. He designed the Missouri Botanical Gardens here in St. Louis, and they got them all over the world. It goes back to what I just said. We've got to step outside the box. We've got to go else places to learn and elevate our minds to different levels. And that's what I'm saying. Buckminster Fuller was a hell of a scientist. I mean, he had some great ideas, and he's worth going and listening to. You can find some of his videos on YouTube, Buckminster Fuller. I mean, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy. And stop looking. We got to stop looking at the outside of people, the color of their skin, you know, or he was a white scientist. Some of the prophets were white, you know. So we gotta stop thinking. We gotta elevate our mind. The greater a man experiment, the greater his knowledge. So I just thank God that He put me in the position to be an independent thinker, to become open-minded to new ideas, new concepts. I mean, closed-minded people just like jumping out of a damn airplane with no parachute. You're going to crash because you're not allowing new things to come into your mind. This is a new time and disposition in which we live. We have to start beginning to exploring new ideas, new concepts, because the old is not working. But Buckminster Fuller, I just want to throw that out there, hell of a scientist, you know. And when you listen to Buckminster Fuller and the Lewis Kelso, I mean, they keep it so simple. It's so simple that any common man can understand every. Norm Curlin went to one of the best law schools in America, you know, studied law and economics, you know. But his delivery, it's any common man can understand, you know. What he's taught me in the last 4 years, I feel comfortable about sitting down with the economist and telling him he's operating in the old system that isn't working, you know. But those are things we have to do. We got to become independent thinkers and keep an open mind and gain knowledge. That's to health is wealth, but also knowledge is power. Gaining knowledge on what's happening in America today and what's going on around us is crucial and it's power. Queen Aziza, are you still there?
One thing, Gene.
Yes, I'm here, Gene. I'm sorry. I had my phone on mute because I had to run some water for something. But no, I'm still here, and we have about 6 minutes before the show ends, and it's one more thing of us neglected to mention. About getting involved in. And what I would like to do, with your blessing, of course, I think that now is the time for us to introduce DOS to the world. That's what I think. And I think that we need to place ourselves on every social media outlet. And when I say every, I mean every. It's a big task. It's not impossible, but we have to get in this media river, is what I call it, the sea of social media, because everybody from age 3 to 300 is on social media in some form or fashion. And when we talk about new ways of galvanizing people, you have to go to where the people are. Technology has made it possible. And I think that we need to start with the most popular media sites because, number one, we are losing black media. We are down to the studs when it comes to black positive media. I'm not talking about radio shows, TV shows, talk shows, and all of that. I'm talking about when you talk about a media blast, the things that we're promoting, the things that you see us involved in is homosexuality, fashion, sex, and violence. That's how a lot of our people are being portrayed. We need to give them something to look forward to. You say you want the youth involved, this is how you reach them. You say you want the middle-aged, the 30 to 45s involved, this is how you reach them. Because this is where they are. And I think that that's how we need to start expanding DOS going forward. Not that we're going to discontinue our radio shows. Yes, it's great. But there are so many other people and so many other avenues that we can travel to get people. Because I see the problem. And overall, over everything else, the problem with us is disunity. And when I say us, I mean black, white, brown, red people. We are disunified by all of the BS, the fear, the unwillingness to come together for a common cause. And it really awakened me when you said, yeah, we can get together with other organizations, but we have to be in agreement with this economic system. And I think that is absolutely the key, because no matter what race you are having to deal with this economic system. Economics is universal. What happens in America impacts a lot of places, just like what happened in a lot of other places impacts America. But how are we impacted right here on the homeland is what we have to address. And I promise you, there are more poor people than there are rich people. And I think together we can come and they can hear from us as a unified group behind one agenda. And that is this new economic paradigm. I honestly believe we can make it happen. I honestly believe we're going to make it happen. So those are my last words. And we're down to the last 2 minutes. So, Brother Gene, I'm going to let you say your last thought.
Yeah,
also,
I just
90, want to point, 90 seconds.
I just want to point out CSJ has a project going on where they're creating a computer technology game on this. I think it's the Citizen Land Development Cooperative where children can play an actual video game based around capital ownership and expanded ownership. So that's one. That's a project that CESJ is working on. I think that's a great way of getting to the youth. But I disagree with everything you're saying. There's work to be done. You know, let's come together, you know, on the core. But the main thing is we got to change the monetary system. Has to be at the forefront of any movement is the monetary policy has to be changed.
Yes, sir.
No, I would add, Gene, is that if, in fact, you begin to organize the DAS, I think out of that can come somebody to run for president in either of the two parties or even become part of the Unite America Party, a new party to Unite America. and there is, and there's a paper on what it would do to push the Economic Democracy Act. But it would be great to have a DAS leader run for president.
Okay. All right. Well, if that is all, I want to thank everyone who came, Dr. Curlin, Dr. Bob Bradley, Brother Vernon Muhammad, and Brother Kareem Muhammad, and, of course, our co-host, Brother Gene Gordon. I look forward to hearing your voices next week as we go with Nation Building Presents, Descendants of American Slaves for Economic and Social Justice. So we will be back here October the 9th, if I'm not mistaken. It's October the 9th. We're going to do this at the same time. I appreciate everyone who has listened thus far. You don't know what it means to us to just have this much of your attention. I think the last show was like 16,000 and something. But, hey, on a Sunday afternoon nationwide, I appreciate it. That you're taking the time out, whether you listen for 15 minutes or more, it doesn't matter. You appreciate it. So we hope to hear from some of you all next week. Thank you all again. Thank you to my panelists, and we will hear from you next week. And I hope everybody will actually come back and join us in the discussion as we talk about Descendants of American Slaves, Economic and Social Justice. Good night, everybody. One nation, one love.
Good night.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer for all in love in our head. You know we've got to find a way to bring some love and tears here today. Picket lines and picket signs. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see. Oh, what's going on? Right now.